AfterBuzzers, what is up? We have high hopes for Alex. We have low lows for Valerie. And it looks like Laura's on a road trip and we don't know when she's coming back. Plus, we have a special guest. Stick around. We're going to get into it. Ep 11, Fire Sale of Casual.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin. A
lovely day. So this is our jam song for tonight, people, because we have such happiness in Ep 11. Fire Sale really gives us Alex having a great time. So we have so much to dish on. It is a full lovely day. I'm Elizabeth Alfano. Great to have you back with me and my lovely co-host. If you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at DinnerPartyCHGO. And then all my celebrity interviews are on TheDinnerParty.tv. Plus, I'm still on Facebook. Even if many of you are not, I still am on Facebook. So we also have the lovely Kaylee Rose with
me right here. Hey, AfterBuzzers, what is up? I'm Kaylee Rose, and you can find me on social media at Kaylee Rose, and check out my animated series, Between Busts. And we have our special guest.
What is better? Xander Lehman is in the house.
Woo! Hello.
Writer, creator, executive producer of Casual, the whole series. And Xander, how old are you?
I just turned 30. I had a birthday this week.
Woo. Crazy.
Happy belated.
Year three of Casual, which means you started it at 27.
Yeah. It was. It's been quite a ride. 3 years.
It is just sick.
I want to say you're a modern medical marvel. That's not quite the phrase.
Thank you very much.
Too.
Appreciate
on top
that.
Of being awesome.
And you've got world peace under your belt. So clearly you've done a lot for the world.
Well, not peace in this family.
No.
Let's break it down a little bit. Now that we have the insider scoop, because we have the writer here, there's so much we want to talk to you about, particularly with Val's character. But we're not going to start out with Val. We're going to start with the really happy parts. So here we have Leah and Leon.
Yay!
Gosh, how I love them. Okay, so gosh, how I love them, and I love how this transpires. No one sees this coming. At least I didn't. Mm-mm. I thought they were about to break up.
I thought she was cheating. Of course, you led us to believe
that's
that.
What the intention
was. Or it was like a cheating drug deal. You know? Because I was like, "What? Who is Mark? Who is she sketchily texting in the bathroom?"
I thought she was going to break up with. Who knew? I thought she was going to break up with him, saying like, "Actually, this is too perfect. I can't do it."
I know.
But instead, like, she says like, I want it to be this way all the time. And meanwhile, and I thought this was so funny, so a real true sort of tip of the hat to that it's a comedy show, because so much in the show is drama. Mm. But there's this funny music that starts while she's almost breaking up and then not really. Yeah. And Leon's like, is this a commercial? What's going on?
He thinks it's a breakup too. My heart was just out of my body on the table like, no! We had them for like one episode of Bliss, and then they're going to break up, but no.
No, they're in
it. And kudos to you for having a woman propose to a man.
Thank you. The episode written by two women, directed by a woman, obviously.
Wonderful.
They put that spin on there.
It's incredible, because there's such a stigma on it. Like, I reached out to my fiancé on online dating, and I still regret it, because I reach out to
him.
I do. Wow. I want to be the traditional woman, but at the same time, power to me, power to Leah.
Yeah. She knows what she wanted.
So I think this whole episode around this is really interesting, because here you have later, and we'll get into it, but Val, who's asked to be a bridesmaid, and usually women are clamoring to be bridesmaids. She wants nothing to do with it. Men usually want nothing to do with the wedding. And here you have Alex like dying to be a groomsman. He just wants it. So I loved all the role reversals throughout the whole episode, actually. I thought it was super fun. But let's get into a little bit of the characters. We're going to talk about characters up and down, how the arcs happen throughout this episode. So we have this wonderful scene with Leah and Leanne. She says, you're my survival partner. And it's just happy, happy, joy, joy. So then we go to Alex and Judy. So we continue the joy here, I think, with Alex in this episode. So they're having sex. And I'll say it's the only time there's sex in this episode. Sometimes the episode is like all sex. But we only have one real sex scene going on.
I should count back. Like, okay, this episode has one. This episode is zero. Like, are there any that had zero?
Oh, I don't know.
There's been some zeros this year. But there's been some big, there's been some heavy ones early on, too.
Three, exactly. You know,
big ones.
Five.
Yeah. Stringing right along.
Mm-hmm. I like the more sex episodes. I'm going to call that right now.
Oh, you are. Oh, you're
I'm into the
it.
More sex episodes.
Good to know. We'll write to that. We will write to that for you.
Let Hulu in on what you just learned. So, but they're all happy. They're rolling around after sex and, you know, Alex showing his true, I am a boy. I'm having fun. It's all about me. This is good, good, good. And I'm going to say, like, they're roommate child, Ray. She's like their child, right?
She hops
on the bed like a frog.
Boundaryless. And sits on the bed with them.
And is like, chin it up. And Alex doesn't really notice the difference. He's like,
fine
this
with
is
it.
All, you know, we might be naked.
He has no boundaries as
but
well.
It doesn't
exactly.
really matter.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But Judy has some boundaries, and so she eventually has to say, okay,
well, she's
I
an adult
go.
With
yeah.
a child. She's a real person.
Right.
So, you know.
Yes. And but I have to hand it to her character. She's a pretty chill character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she handles Alex with a grain of salt. She mm-hmm. sort of says, I'm naked. And I have to go get my son. Sorry to be like the party
Hello.
Crusher.
Yes. Yeah. But kudos to you guys. I'm going to say it twice. Kudos. In the casting, because Judy Greer is fantastic. The woman
Judy
who plays
Greer.
Ray, I can't think of her name right now, fantastic.
Maya Erskine, they're both amazing.
Yeah.
Really, really good actresses.
Everyone is so spot on. You have the best guest stars.
We really
of
do.
Any
we're
show
so
ever.
Lucky.
Yeah.
We're so lucky.
Chase Crawford. I know we're not there anymore, but I'm going to go back to Chase Crawford.
Some good
that
sex
was
there.
For us.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I know.
We talked about the butt shots a lot.
He's got a great butt. What are you going to do?
Jamie Chung.
Yeah.
I went home that night inspired. Like, she was a feline in this act. Do you remember that scene?
Well,
I do.
I remember that scene, but I also remember throughout the series there have been some great guests, like mm-hmm. Vincent Kartheiser,
yeah.
and I mean, some really wonderful big guests. And I was wondering, and I'm getting off topic because we do want to go through our characters,
here.
But we're here. I was wondering, do you write for people specifically? Like, you say, oh, I'm going to get Vincent, and then you write around his talents?
We've been really lucky. Vincent was someone we thought of, and we were able to get him. It was perfect timing. And Judy, Greer, her character was named Judy Green because we were like, this is Judy Greer, we have to get her. And one of our producers, Helen Esterbrook, is friends with her and talked to her, and we, again, so lucky to get her. She's amazing.
That's she fantastic. Is amazing.
Yeah.
And so that's been one of the highlights, at least for me, of all of the series, is that you have this really strong writing and these characters that are working it out and struggling. Then you have all these cameos that are just so great.
It's like
and
a
delightful.
Look who's coming to dinner kind of thing.
Right? Yeah.
That's a good way.
Alex's doorbell rings. Is it going to bang?
Right?
Yeah. Game night.
Who are we writing for now? Okay, so let's get back a little bit to Alex. So Alex is kind of showing his true colors with Judy, and then he's kind of showing his true colors with Leon because he wants groomsmen. Mm. But Ray says, well, you know, what kind of a friend have you really been to Leon?
Yeah, and he needed to hear that.
And this is what I love about Alex in this moment. He's mature enough, and he wouldn't have been before. He's mature enough to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, like, yeah, but Leon's a saint, and I can't be Saint Leon. You can't hold me to those standards. But he starts to realize what he's missing, what he's missing in his relationships, and he's actually taking Ray's advice to heart. So this is a big, in my opinion, big episode for Alex.
Yeah.
Totally.
Huge arc for him. He starts thinking about other people for the first time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He builds Leon an office.
He's growing up.
In his home.
He's growing up.
Becoming a
friend.
A
beautiful gesture.
Yeah.
Yes, and I actually love that office because it had, like, sparkly lights in the background. I thought it was really
Laura's old
good.
Room is now Leon's office.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's going to get complicated.
Exactly.
And then he gets the apology aspidistra. No.
Aloe
vera.
Yeah.
The apology aloe vera.
She's like, you didn't have to do this, like touching it. Like, thank
but,
you.
Again, Judy Greer and the character as you've written it. So wonderful. She doesn't say, like, there are no flowers. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, a weed. She doesn't do that. She says, like, hey, that's super fun.
It's a soothing plant.
And kind of rolls with it.
So, yeah,
she appreciates him for what he is, I think, so far.
She does.
Yeah.
It's fun for her. It's fun for her in the moment. You know, it's not that serious for her. He's the guy who sends her an aloe and finally is able to have sex with her.
Right. And so, but it does kind of soothe her, as you say, warm her up, because she ends up going to the engagement party, which she was like, I don't know if I can, who am I going to get
a
babysitter?
Yeah.
Right. How's that going to work out? But so Alex is on this wonderful trajectory. And at the end, you see them dancing and he's even conscientious about Ray at home. He's like, I don't want to make too much noise when I'm moving boxes. And, you know, he's starting to give back and form relationships.
Yeah.
That's what he wants.
But that is what he wants. We've talked about this a lot. Mm. There have been times when he's even wanted a baby or, you know, thinks he wants a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor thing doesn't
Whether
probably,
or not the reality would be what he wants.
Uh-huh.
But I loved, even when they mentioned, like, oh, yeah, we're still looking for someone to oversee the ceremony. He's like, I'll do it. I'm on it. Like,
He loves it.
We weren't asking. Okay, fine. You know, and he just takes that position, and that's a crucial, as someone who's getting married in September, that's a crucial position that Alex just steps up onto. I mean, I'm assuming he'll follow through and they'll follow through.
You'll have to keep watching to find out. Yeah.
Well, and I love how he then says to Judy, like, London, come on. And she's like, but, you know, she's like,
that's not how you make decisions.
But this to me is so endearing. This is one of the reasons why I love this character. Sure, he's a goofball, and he's maybe thinking about himself, and he's not so logical, smart with relationships.
Adult.
But he adults, right? Yeah. But he, his heart is in the right place.
Yeah. And my heart goes out to him when he was disappointed about not being a groomsman. I think most adults have been in that position where you're like, maybe I'll make the cut, and then you don't, and he just so doesn't. You
know? He wants to be at the center of everyone else's life, he's always surprised to find out that he's not.
Yeah.
And you, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. I wonder where you got that. Maybe as writer, you lifted it from your own page. Judy actually says, I have to put my son first, otherwise he won't call me when he's in college.
Yeah.
Because she knows that Alex really wants to be first. He wants to walk into her apartment with some ice cream and be like, drop your kid. I have to talk to you. My friend's getting married.
But he brought the ice cream also for Clark.
Yeah,
let's give him some credit. I'm always like the Alex cheerleader.
No, he is sweet. On his side. I love that.
He's so very sweet. He is sweet.
But he's a lot to root for.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know?
Yeah, he does have
we
a lot
talk about
to
this
for.
Often. Can I ask you quickly? Like, I would say, who are you? But I'll say, who do you sympathize with the most?
I tend to write the Alex character as well as anyone, I think. most of the writing staff is women, and they write the other women characters a little better than I do. But that said, I sympathize with all of the characters. Yeah. I love all of them as flawed and messed up as they all are.
We get mad at Val a lot, but we'll get there.
Val's had a tough season.
We do. Tough season. And so I wanted to talk to you about that, because I don't think I can talk about Laura before talking about Val.
Yeah.
So, I just got awful. This is a god awful episode for Val. So, Val.
Isn't every episode a terrible episode?
Recently, it's just, but it's getting worse.
Yeah.
So, we'll go through all the relationships that Val has and how she's sabotaging every single solitary one of them, starting with herself, of course. But so she learns that Leah's getting married and she has this really negative reaction like, it must be for a green card. She just doesn't have an inner to be happy for Leah.
Yeah.
Oh, Val, that comment. So, I'm just like, who says that out loud?
Yeah.
Val does. But then we get into the really complicated stuff. Val in a relationship. Mm. So she's dragged in Jack, like sort of beat him to submission because he was on, you know, reprieve from sex and that's over now. And so now they're starting to have a relationship, at least in Jack's mind. He's comfortable with her. He walks in the door. He puts his shoes around.
He's all chill.
And she just can't be comfortable.
She just doesn't want to be happy. I think she's just the type of person who wants to be unhappy, and so she creates those situations. What do you think?
So is that
No. I think it's especially this year. You know, she had this thing happen to her at the start of the season that threw her sense of self totally out the window. Mm. And this whole season for her is trying to find out what her real self is. Mm. And what she's doing is alienating everyone around her and she's clawing for something that she's not getting. Yeah. And everyone else is feeling the effects of it.
But she's clawing in a way that she could never get it. It would actually never, ever be possible to get it. And you have a couple really interesting single inputs to her that she completely knows, understands, and rejects. And the first one comes from Jack when he says, Val says, well, Alex hasn't been calling me back. Mm-hmm. So she's lamenting about this brother that she's ever around all the time and doesn't. And he says, oh, well, maybe he's getting off the codependent carousel.
Mm-hmm. I love that phrase,
Val's still riding around.
And Val is so
great
dependent. Yeah. And in Val's mind, everyone else is dependent or everyone else is, you know, she does the same thing later with Ethan.
Because I like the carousel image because it goes around and it goes
around.
It
never goes anywhere.
Yes. Yeah. And Jack, I love how he's so often the voice of reason.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know? He's a real guy. I mean, he leaves his shoes around, but he tells it how it is. And Val doesn't want to hear that. I think
he's
there
for her no matter what.
She wants to be on the hotel with him like season two. She wants that version.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Jack at least has emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. I mean, his life might be a little bit of a wreck, but he's getting it together and he's...
Not sexual intelligence, apparently. No. But emotional.
He's working on that.
Yeah, emotional. He's working on it. Just the emotional part. Yes. But so there's that really, I think, telling episode scene with Jack. And then she goes with Ethan and she's sort of dishing on Jack. Like, Jack didn't give me what I wanted. And he puts his shoes everywhere. And so Ethan, sort of being that friend that sort of maybe takes you down a notch. They think they're supporting you by saying,
he's
I hear you.
With her,
But he's as honest as he can be, getting the very twisted version that Val gives him, which is not really the real version.
Absolutely.
So Ethan says, oh, so the relationship's just going to be on his terms then. It's not really at all. It's totally on Val's terms. It's a real relationship.
Yeah.
Right. So
totally on Val's
but
terms.
Val that sticks with her. Uh-huh. That like, okay, I guess, you know, do I have to defend myself here? Mm. Or she's just disgruntled and unhappy.
And I was so mad at her when she left Jack at the party. Like, I hate when people go to the extreme with a fight, you know? Like, you can have a fight and you can work through it and you can get over it, but she walks away. And this is a constant thing with her. People come to love her, come to support her and be friends with her. She just slaps them in the face and walks away. Every opportunity she has for happiness, she sabotages.
Yeah, I think it's a cry for help and no one's listening in the way she wants them to listen.
Yeah. Well, I feel like, does she even know the way that she wants them to listen?
No, she doesn't. No. She really doesn't.
And it's so frustrating. No one really can listen to her because sometimes she isn't really telling the real story just because she doesn't know herself that well. Mm-hmm. And like here, for example, she Ethan also says like, well, you know, why are you in this relationship? And she says, well, I'm staying because Jack is in recovery and I wouldn't want him to not to be in recovery, which is such complete baloney.
She's a martyr, so she thinks.
So she's right. She's really making it out to be the victim, but she's the one who pulled him from recovery. And if anything, it's that she can't lay off the sex with him. Yeah. And it's just so sad. And Jack, our happy Jack, you know, they're at the engagement party. And he's like, I feel a very mediocre Macarena coming on.
He's like, want to see these mediocre dance moves? I do.
She's like, no, I want to go home.
Yeah.
And he's like, why are you doing this? And so she says this to me. It was so poignant. And Michaela Watkins, can we just shout out to Michaela Watkins? Mm-hmm. This is so well played. Almost on the verge of breaking, she says what Ethan said, trying to defend herself, beat back for herself. She says, oh, I guess this relationship is just on your terms. But she can't even look at him because she knows that that's baloney.
Yeah, at a party for her friends.
At a party for her friends, right.
Come on!
But then he calls her out on it, and now she's mad and doesn't have the emotional bandwidth
to
deal with it.
But every week we're like, okay, she's going to sink lower, and eventually she's going to rise. When is the rise, Xander?
Wait, please, because we can't take it much longer.
Look, I want the rise.
When is the rise?
I want the rise, too. We need more episodes. Get
she
the rise.
She hasn't gone low enough.
She's got to hit rock bottom, which I think you'll see in the next two episodes.
Yeah.
It's getting worse,
you
right?
You get a background for her, and you see a side of her in a world of vows that you didn't see before, and I think that gives some color for all this.
Please tell me she doesn't lose Jack.
You're going to have to keep watching.
I actually feel like
she doesn't deserve Jack right
now.
No,
she does
not. She's got so much to work out on her own. And she also doesn't deserve Laura. So she treats Laura so horribly, I think. Mm. First of all, it's interesting to me that there are women writers and directors here because that mother-daughter bond is completely not there. And I know that teenagers, particularly self-sufficient teenagers, can just be like, back off. I got plans and I'm with my phone. And
I'm
going
to sell your table.
Yes. But here, her daughter's taking pictures of things that we learned she wants to sell on eBay. She's trying to get money. We sort of slowly piece together, right, that she's maybe taking a trip. Val just could care less. She walks right in. She's on her phone. She's like, what are you doing? Her daughter answers. She doesn't even look.
Yes. I love seeing Val's frustration with the group text because group emails and group texts drive everyone insane, you know?
Yeah, that's why she didn't want to be a bridesmaid.
Yeah. Like, who would want to? Her in that situation was spot
on. That is Valerie's redeeming qualities that she doesn't want to be a bridesmaid because I have to say being a bridesmaid would be the god-awful worst thing. I've never been a bridesmaid.
Oh, no.
I never want to be a bridesmaid. I'm so sorry.
Hey, it's okay.
Well, I feel pretty safe in this situation.
No, I've gotten told that I'm the most chill bride ever. So
there you go.
But maybe too chill.
That's my co-host, chill bride that she is.
Chill bride. Nice.
Good
hashtag
girl.
Chill bride.
But and then later, so Michaela, Valerie's getting ready for the engagement party, and she's so just like, I could care less about this. Again, Michaela does such a great job with her body movement. She's so funny, even if the dialogue is really severe. And she just lays into Laura. Fix this table. I guess she's mad.
Finally, though, I give her a little credit there because she's finally saying, take responsibility for your actions. And Laura does it in a very Laura way, which at first... Can I talk about that right now?
Go ahead.
Can I go there?
No, of course,
because at first I was like, you little twit. Like, how could you sell her coffee or her dining room table? But then I was like, no, she's not like such a twit. She's such a teenager. That's exactly the thing. So
I
forgive her
so
more than I've ever forgiven Val. Really? That's such a teenager thing to do, just to have zero concern for other people. She doesn't care how much she spent on that table, you know?
I felt like her parents have totally abandoned her. Mm-hmm. And when her father was like, oh, yeah, no, my daughter doesn't want to stay and have lunch with us and practically kicks her out of any kind of family scene, that she's just like, screw it, I'm selling your table. You guys don't care about me, I don't care about you right back.
But I can see the father's perspective, too, of like, oh, this teenager doesn't want to hang out with us old fogies, you know?
They don't even live together anymore. If you don't see your daughter, wouldn't you be like, baby, come on in.
He needs to reach out. Yeah, in a number of ways.
Oh, he's horrible.
I'm just trying to get
devil's advocate. I know. No, you're so right. No, and I'm just, I don't know. I just, so yeah. Please explain this to me.
Yeah, no, I think you're both right. look, I think Laura, the entire season is looking for someone to pay attention to her. And Val's too busy trying to figure out who she is and doesn't have time for Laura. And she needs Laura to be okay with herself. And Laura's obviously not okay. So Laura's selling the table and doing this stuff to try to be seen by Valerie. But Valerie's eyes are closed because she's worried about herself. And it's all sort of come to a head at the end of this episode where we get the realization that Laura's gone. And Val just has, like, let the boat sail out to sea, basically.
And so... help me out. Does Val at the end of this, she's so engrossed in her own tears at the end of the engagement party and perhaps going for a drink with Ethan as she's smoking outside.
Please do not sleep with Ethan, Val.
Oh, no.
I will be so mad.
Would she?
I don't know. It seems like we're
Xander,
headed.
Tell us.
You're going to know in the next episode. The next episode is going to reveal a lot of things. A lot of things will come out.
But does she even realize that her daughter's gone?
No, of course not. When will she notice? You know, it'll be days.
Like, she notices that the wine's gone, but she doesn't notice that her daughter's
and
gone.
And I like that the drinking has progressed, too. Because it used to be more wine, drinking wine by myself.
Oh, now it's
vodka straight up.
Things are getting bad. It's bad for everyone there.
Things are getting bad.
Only Leah and Leah are having happiness.
Thank God for them. Thank you for giving us them.
We need that. We definitely need that.
Also, I really liked when Alex straight up said to Val, "This is what you wanted. You wanted me to disengage from you."
Oh, I love that.
You.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. Right.
So he is clear enough to recognize that. And I said last week we talked a little bit about maybe they needed distance in order to get closer to other people because it was codependent.
That's what this season is. That they're living apart and they're doing it for the first time. And obviously the effects are really detrimental to Valerie and to Alex to a certain extent, although he seems to be doing better than she is.
Heck yes.
Yeah, no, he seems to be doing well, I would say. Like,
he's being healthier, certainly.
Yes, and it allows more room in his life for other people like Ray to influence him in a positive way because Val just takes everybody down, really. So he needs to get away from her, I would say. And I like, that he says everybody does. I like, too, that he sort of says, like, this is great. Just have a good time, Val.
Yeah.
Because it's what you wanted. You're with Jack. I'm with Judy. This is great. Just, like, have a good time. And, of course,
she can't.
Nope.
She has no capability.
She's in too much pain, which I completely understand. So, tell us a little bit about how you came up for this series, because I think you were writing this when you were living with your sister.
I was, and she was dating my best friend, and I wrote the show because they would hang out in the apartment, and eventually I felt like it had to be it was a story I wanted to tell about a weird brother and sister relationship with a friend in the middle, and it evolved this 3 years after the fact, but it was... You know, my sister and I are close, not like these two characters, but a lot of it. Yeah, real, real close.
Codependent Xander.
And then you slept with
No, we're good now. We're good now. But yeah, you take this sort of seed of an idea and it blossoms into something with these characters who take on the life of their own, essentially.
I heard an interview with Michaela that she, in the audition, said, okay, so when do Alex and Val sleep together?
She's not the only one to ask. A lot of people ask that. Yeah, there's that there's an underlying feeling of sort of like grossly over close siblings that everyone is turned off by, but you also want them to be happy together. It's confusing. We want it to be confusing, so they're not going to sleep together.
It's funny because I never think of them sleeping together, but I equate them to Siamese twins or any kind of, you know, any sort of physicality difference, physical difference is so painful for them that to me it seems like they're twins of some sort.
Yeah. They're symbiotic. Well, they need each other.
Yes, they really do.
Well, everyone's seen Laura having sex.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Well, how did you come to that conclusion that it was going to be this type of family? Because this show made me feel so conservative and I never knew I was conservative.
I feel the same way and I don't think I'm conservative.
Yeah. The scene when she walked in on Laura having sex was like, I'm going to the grocery store and then left.
Yeah, I know some parents and families who operate like this to a certain extent. Mm. And, you know, in Los Angeles, in this modern era that we live in, it's not totally out of the realm.
Yeah. So I am conservative then.
Yeah.
Well, I think those people are on the extreme. I still, you know, it's television, so you have to... They're a specific type of character that we're drawing, but, you know, they're certainly more promiscuous than I am in my life for most of the people I know, so...
But it's part of me thinks, you know, is it empowering to have your teenager be that sexual? Is it a good thing? You know, it's making me question what I previously thought, which is a beautiful thing with a show like this.
Yeah, we don't want to put value judgments on this stuff. Yeah. And I think that's the most important thing is like, there are consequences for these things. These characters are messed up and they do really bad things and you hate them at times. A lot of it's probably because they have no boundaries and they haven't been told how to act or how to sort of socialize. But on the other hand, they're free in other ways and they're able to see the world in a certain way. So, you know, you get the good and the bad. We don't try to say one is right or one is wrong.
Right. And I understand this for the adults. It's harder for me for the minor who you just, your heart breaks when she has no guidance.
Yeah.
And so, of course, she's missing Casey. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She really is looking for anybody who could give her anything.
And she thought that was going to be her mother figure, and Casey took off. So
that's
hard. It's, you feel Laura's being abandoned left and right.
Left and right. It's just breaking my heart. Mm-hmm. So, but another thing I read about you that's very interesting. So this series really was predicated on online dating. Mm-hmm. But you yourself have never done online dating.
Not seriously. I did a little research, but nothing. I haven't met people, long-term girlfriends online. So.
Okay, wait. So you never really did online dating, but you wrote a show about online dating.
My entire writing staff did a lot of online
dating. So
which is mostly women, right?
Like yes, a lot of women. And yes, that we when we did the interviews, a lot of it was about, what's your online dating experience?
Oh my God.
Are you divorced? Are you single? Tell me about who you've, you know, dated and all
personal.
Of that. And the ones who are the most eager to share and have the best stories tended to be the ones who were writing on the show.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
That's well, so
wonderful.
We both met our partners online.
Yeah. You did? Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. I love that.
We've been together 5 years, and you guys have been together?
It's going to be 5 years in October.
Congratulations.
But it was my first and only online date, which people hate to hear. But
you nailed it out of the gate.
Oh, wow. That was so not my experience.
I mean, not out of, I had a lot of dating over that, you know? Like, I kissed some frogs.
Yeah, not me. Yeah, no. I really, years and years of getting on and getting off and getting on and getting off. And,
but it works.
Yeah. I mean, I did.
How
it
did you grow up with Snooger? I can't ever say
Snooger. Oh, my God. That name, we went through over 100 names.
Really?
And we could not clear a name legally. And we had things we liked, and we had things we didn't like that might have cleared. And finally, that was the one that we were like, let's take two words and combine them, like Zillow, which is like zillion and pillow. And we're like Snooger, which is like... God, what were the two words? We're like, I don't even remember. It was such a traumatic experience. Snot and booger. That's what people say. No, it was a thing that we just were like, this sort of makes sense. It could be real. It cleared. Let's do it. And it kind of took on a life of its own.
I have the hardest time just saying the word. The other day when I was hosting, or I was just hosting by myself, I was like, snooker, snooker. And then I was like, by myself in this room. I'm like, I got to stop. I'm sorry, guys. You get to see this.
So I have another question for you. So you wrote this at 24.
Mm-hmm.
You pitched probably around 26.
Yeah.
Got green-lighted at 27, something like this?
I think that's, maybe 25, the draft really came out. So, no, it was a long, this is a long process. It takes a while. You write a pilot, and then your agents read it, and they give you notes, and you write another draft, and then it takes months to get the right people to read it.
So my real question wasn't going to be how long it takes, but how the heck did you do it?
I won the lottery. That's really what it is. Like, it's right place, right time. Mm. Jason Reitman had been coming off a movie, had been trying to do television, could not find the script that he wanted to do. We happen to have the same agent. My agent said, he will like this if you will wait for him to read it. I think you should wait. And I waited, a decent amount of months. And when he read it, he did like it. And that was what was required to let Hulu say, okay, we'll make this show. Jason wants to do it. We don't care that you haven't done a lot of TV. We've got this great director who wants to do a show. Let's do this.
That's incredible.
Wow.
Yeah, right place, right time. Seriously.
But you deserve it.
Well, thank you very much. Right. I appreciate it.
I can, I feel like so many times an actor will come out or a director or a writer and people will say, oh my God, an overnight sensation. You were working for years.
No.
I'm sure there was a lot of work in between.
I was an assistant for 4 years.
That?
Yeah,
so.
I mean, I was like cutting my teeth properly, pushing a mail cart and answering phones. Can't talk about them, not
sure
in public.
But you do have other writing projects in the hopper, you were saying.
Yeah, I have a couple other shows I'm working on and movies that can't get made at the moment that I'm hoping to get made in the future. So,
you
always
might move
work
to
on
movies,
I think as a writer, you always do as many as you can until one goes, because it's so rare to get anything made that, like, if a movie were to get made, I would jump for joy. I have no expectation it'll ever get made. This show takes up 90% of my bandwidth, and now I'm on hiatus so I can do those other things, but you never expect anything to get made, including this show. I had no expectation it would get made.
Are you one of those writers that thinks it's important to write every single day?
I used to. Now I try to write 4 or 5 times a week. When I was first starting out, I wrote every day, and I wrote many hours, and I was really bad, so that was important. I think I'm a better writer now, and
10,000 hours?
Yeah, I don't need the practice. Like, I needed the practice early on. I needed to really fail and write a bunch of really bad stuff, and now I can write a pretty good scene, so I don't need to sit there for... Well, I mean, like, you realize, you're like, oh, I know how this is going to be shot, how it's going to work. I think this will work as a scene. I don't need to spend 5 hours workshopping this scene, which 3 or 4 years ago I would have sat and rewritten that scene 10 times.
Nice. And what is the atmosphere like on set? Because you've got these incredible comedians, mm-hmm. and yet they're doing drama. And I'm going to say pretty diehard drama, you yeah. know, pretty serious drama. And then Jason, depending on if he's directing mm-hmm. or not. And then you've had Gillian Robespierre.
Mm-hmm. Mike Bob.
Fantastic name.
Yeah.
She we've just directed Fire Sale, mm-hmm. Ep 11. So you've got, you know, incredible directors all around you. What is atmosphere like on set?
It's really friendly. Everyone's really nice. Like, we have the nicest crew you can imagine. Our actors are all really smart. They've it's created so their own shows. Yeah. They're friendly. They love each other. We all yeah. hang out outside of work. Like, mm. we know how lucky we are to make this show, and everyone wants it to just go as smoothly as possible because we know you only get one or two of these in your life, so make it last. And, yes. like, everyone's just a professional. So it's nice. We shoot in L.A. Everyone gets to go home to their families and their beds at the end of the night.
That's the best.
Yeah, the network is great to us. They let us do the thing we want to do. So honestly, it's like it's a dream. It's a great yeah. it's a great place to be, and I'm lucky to have made 3 years of it.
And did you envision it? So Jason comes on, mm-hmm. you're over the moon, I'm
yeah.
sure. And did the two of you sit together and say, this is going to go to Hulu? Or did you envision Hulu was the right place for you?
No, we had a feeling that a streaming service would be right mm-hmm. for it because it doesn't fit into a nice, neat little box of what it is.
Right.
And we took it out to a couple places, and Hulu was, again, right place, right time. They wanted to make bigger stuff with bigger budgets, that it's a little more serious television. And I think we were like the perfect timing of like, oh, we had two scripts and Jason, and they wanted to do it. So we were like, yeah. we don't really know that much about Hulu, but they get the vision,
yes.
and
yeah.
they're going to give us the money for the budgets, and they want to make 10 episodes. So like, yeah, we're going to do that. I mean, why not? And
awesome.
Here we are 3 years later, and they've been great partners.
Who That's were the first actors to come on?
Michaela was the first one to ever read.
Yeah? Wow.
Like, ever read any of my words I've ever written. So,
oh, my word.
And what an actress to read.
It was amazing. Like, literally the first read, you're like, oh, it's going to work. This is great. Like, one for one right out of the box.
Oh, my
Hired.
Yeah.
Wow, and she's an incredible actress.
She's amazing.
And I'm so happy for her because I feel what this script does for her is it really shows the breadth of what she can do.
She can do anything.
So, you know, I think of her as just a commensurate comedian. And
yeah.
here
oh,
she is doing drama so strong.
Yeah, we like to challenge them. I mean, they're all good comedic actors, but doing drama, they probably don't get to do as much in their other career, you know, choices. So for us, it's like, oh, we're going to make you do hard stuff. You're going to cry. You're going to be really internal, have all these difficult things. Like, I think that's fun for them. They like that. It's
yes.
a challenge.
Right.
But
yeah.
pepper it with a little bit of very
yeah,
subtle
humor. Yeah, but be fun.
Humor,
be
you know?
Fun while
yeah.
you are heartbroken and destroyed. just a smile here and there, please.
A little subtlety.
Yeah.
Well, I thought this was the best episode that Michaela's ever done.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
she was
great.
On the brink of crying, saying to Jack, well, this relationship is just on your terms then.
Mm-hmm.
Like, trying to pick a fight, but she didn't even, because she's
Have
just
the
so,
heart.
Haven't,
yeah.
she
yeah.
couldn't even do it anymore.
Yeah.
She loves to pick fights with people and tear it down and screw up the situation, and she couldn't even do that anymore.
Yeah.
She was
yeah.
so broken.
You had 9 out of 13 episodes directed by women this season?
Yeah.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes.
We've got great directors.
How did that happen? Did you decide at the get-go, we want to have a lot of female directors because of the two female leads, or?
I mean, not specifically. I will say, last season we had, I think, 6 of 13 were directed by women, which we were happy about. And this year, you know, Helen Estabrook, who's one of the other EPs, does a lot of the director hiring, and we talked about it early on and decided, you know, what are the movies we've really liked? What are the good indie films we've sparked to? And it happened to be a lot of films directed by women. And so we just decided, let's do a first round. We'll just offer to all women and see if we get them. And we got, I think, you know, four out of 5 or 5 out of 6. And then we're like, okay, I guess we've got a lot of women this year, and they're
great.
And it's like, these are people that both of us have been dying to work with forever. So for us, it's just like a dream come true. This is like,
yeah.
oh, we get to hang out with Carrie
and
Brownstein
Lake
for two
Bell.
Weeks, and Lake Bell, and Lynn Shelton, and
yes.
like, you know, Amy York Rubin, and
Gillian
Robespierre. Like, these are great, great directors. And for us, like, we just want to make more stuff with them. So
yeah.
it's selfish on our part. We're like, oh, you're great. Do our show. And then also, let's be friends and hang out.
Let's have dinner parties in my
backyard. Exactly.
Well, so I have a question there. With so many female writers and so many female directors, I would have thought there might be more of a mother-daughter bond popping up. Tell
There's
me about that.
There's a lot of complexities in a mother-daughter relationship.
Yeah.
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know?
It's tough. I mean, it was something that we talked about throughout the season is keeping that relationship believable, but also servicing their characters properly and giving them arcs. And
yes.
ultimately, like, it's a hard season for both Laura and Valerie. It's really tough. They're at times really unlikable and doing things that people really don't relate to. And, like, I empathize. I totally get it. I think it's really important for the arc of their characters. And, like, if we get more episodes, I promise redemption. Like,
we will turn it.
And I have thoughts for season four that is fully redemptive in a way that I really think would bring it around. But you can't do the same thing every year. And you can't have them have, you know, characters in happy characters live in stasis, and it's not interesting to watch. Right. So, you know, you would get something that would be neutered and just not that interesting.
That's
so
not interesting.
Yeah, you may hate parts of it, you may relate to parts of it, you may hate me, which I understand, but like ultimately
we do not hate you.
Services the show, I promise, in what I think is a good way.
Well, let me ask you a little bit about that, because I think that's fascinating and cruel at the same time. So Hulu does not tell you if you have a season four, so you have to write as if you will never write again, and yet you have to leave a door open for yourself that you will write again. So how do you do that?
Yeah, well, every season finale we've done has had a way that it could be a serious finale, but also opens a door for further stuff. I think the end of season one is Alex and Valerie going to live together regardless. It's like, fuck it, we're doing this. And that could have been the end. That could have been like, okay, these two are together forever and like nothing's going to stop them. Yeah. Season two, you end with the death of the patriarch, and that's like, oh, we're going to live apart and now we're going to try healthy, happy relationships. That could be an end. Like, okay, they've grown enough to be apart and like, we're good. And season three, you'll have to see how it ends. But, like, there's stuff that could carry on for further seasons, and there's stuff that could be like, oh, there's finality here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to walk that line, which is not easy, but that's part of the fun.
Do you have a desired end in mind, if you knew how the series would end? Not that we want it to end.
I have thoughts. I want the characters to be redeemed. I want them to find some level of happiness while it's still being believable. Like, I don't want some series that crushes them in some dark Shakespearean tragedy. Like, that's not what this is.
Okay.
Like, you have to have ups and downs, and I hopefully, if we can end it on our terms, we'll have end on a bittersweet up. It's probably the best we can hope for.
I'll take it.
Yeah,
I'll take it.
You can't all of a sudden just turn it into like,
no. Hey, guys, we're hanging out at dinner all the time. Wee!
Well, we only have time probably for one more question. But I wanted to ask you, And maybe you want to sneak in a final question too, but I'll try to be quick. So I think it's fascinating. You have all these female directors, and you know, you have to keep the continuity of the feel of the show, and yet every director is going to bring something new. So I think that's tricky in and of itself. The editing, I think, is really important to the storytelling because you guys have been doing, I'm going to just blatantly use the term funny cuts, but that doesn't mean anything. It just means that cuts where I wouldn't expect them to be cuts. And I think that abruptness and how separate the stories are running. You can feel all three characters diverging, you know, because the edits keep them so separate.
Yeah.
It's just, could you talk to me a little bit about the editing out of this?
I think it's important. Sure. No, that's intentional, and I'm glad you noticed that. It's hard to tell a story in 30 minutes with all these characters.
Right.
And giving them separate arcs and not putting them all in the same room all the time. And our editors know that, and Jason Reitman from the start has emphasized, you know, when you change worlds with a different cut, change the sound volume, change the look of it, change the color, like really jarring your audience keeps them invested and engaged. Like, whether it's just going from a really quiet, silent scene to, like, a loud musical beat where you go, oh, what's going on here? Like, that keeps you involved in the world in a way that I think is necessary, because if you don't have that, you miss stuff. You look at your phone and you tune out, and then you're like, oh, wait, what's going on? I've totally lost this thread.
Right. Oh, so it's intentional to keep us on the edge of our seats.
Yeah, you want some of that. I mean, there are moments you want to lull your audience into a false sense of security, and parts where you want to give them a bunch of loud stuff that, like, keeps them on the edge of their seat.
See, through Xander, we are getting lessons from Jason Reitman.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for
that. You're welcome.
Do you have any advice for young writers out there?
Yeah, I mean, just write more than you think. I probably wrote 8 or 9 movies and 3 pilots that are literally locked up in my hard drive somewhere, never to be seen, and they're terrible. So it takes a while. It took me four or five years of, like, writing a lot of stuff. So you always think your first ones are good. I thought it, too. Everyone thinks it. They're not. Like, I promise they're not. Like, no, they're terrible. I've reread them. They're awful. Like, after 6 or 7, then you can start to think, okay, maybe I'm in the zone. So that's my piece of advice, is you always need to write more than you think.
That's great.
Yeah, I think, like, looking at your old scripts is like looking at yourself as a 12-year-old with braces. Yeah. You're just like, God, make that picture
go away. Why did someone take a picture?
Why? And why does it still exist?
Oh, I know.
But they're better than what a lot of people can write,
course,
I'm sure.
Of course.
Thank you.
So we are looking forward to episode 12 and 13.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then Hulu, you heard it here. We want more.
Yes.
We want more.
They want
so
more.
We want
more.
Season
please.
4. I got to get redemption. That's really what I want. I want redemption.
We need
so
to see Val in an upswing.
Please.
Yeah. God.
Yeah.
This
and
woman
we
lives.
Have Michaela on the show. So you
yes
got to have season 4. It's just that simple. Xander, where can everybody find you? Let them know.
Like in the world?
Well, if you want them at your doorstep.
I live in Los Angeles. So. I'm on Twitter. It's just my name at Twitter, and I don't really use anything else social media wise. So if you send me a message, I will write back, and that's the best way to do it. Look for me on Twitter.
Awesome. Okay, and it would be at Xander Lehman.
Yeah,
is that
that's
right?
Me. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's how to find him, folks.
Yep.
Kaylee, where can they find you?
I'm Kaylee Rose, and you can find me on all the social media platforms at Kaylee Rose, and my animated series. Check it out, Between Busts.
And I'm Elizabeth Alfano. It's been great to be the host tonight. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at DinnerPartyCHGO. I'm on Facebook, people. You can find me there at Elizabeth Alfano. And all my celebrity interviews are on thedinnerparty.tv. Gosh, I wish we didn't have to go, but it's been great to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks
for
everybody.
Having me.
Thanks, everybody. Woo. Bye, peeps.
Bye.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.